Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? Do people say stuff like that?
I apologize for him.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism. And I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's see if Paul Harvey was prophetic. This is Wretched Radio. Paul Harvey was not a prophet, even if he rather rightly predicted the future of the evangelical church. He is still not a prophet. Why? Because there are no more foretellers. There can be modern-day prophets who are forth-tellers. In other words, they use the Bible and they proclaim it. They're forth-telling, which is usually what almost every prophet did. Very little future predicting going on as part of their prophetic office. They were forth-tellers. Friel, we get the point. Paul Harvey, in 1965, he talked about what could happen or what the devil might do to try to infiltrate, to water down, to try to get people from not repenting and putting their trust in Jesus Christ. Because we need to remember that's what this hokey pokey called life is all about. It is not about taxes. It is not about walls. That was not intended to be a cheap shot. That is not what this world is primarily about. God desires to save sinners. The devil desires sinners don't get saved. And so the devil works pretty tirelessly to make that happen. I believe that he's also striving to try, against every possible odd, to somehow wreck Judgment Day. He has been trying to put an end to the seed, the pre-incarnate Christ. He did that for 4,000 years. And then he tried to put an end to the life of Jesus, the seed, while he was alive. Failure. And now I think he spent the last 2,000 years trying to somehow stave off Judgment Day, because he knows when that day comes, he's not going to be roaming the earth anymore. Instead, he too is going to be cast into a lake of fire. He is not running hell. He will be a captive of hell. The devil will not be running around in the dark, giving unsuspecting pagans a kidney punch, and then giggling with the other demons. He, too, will be suffering in a lake of fire. That is his future, and he's working pretty hard to stave that off. And in the meantime, because he hates that seed, Jesus Christ, so much, he also hates you and me. And so he works to try to keep more and more people from becoming Christians. And so I think the way that he works, because I think there's a structure. I don't want to get too carried away with this, but if you read in Ephesians chapter 6, you see that there's different levels. It seems there's principalities and powers. It seems like there's some sort of military structure. I don't think the devil is after you. I think there could be demons that natter at you. But the devil, I think, is concocting the big ideas. In 1965, Paul Harvey gave it a run. If I were the devil, this is what I would do. Let's see if he was prophetic, because there are no more prophets that foretell today.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about, however necessary, to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve, do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. Mm-hmm. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington.
How did he know? He was simply looking at what was going on in culture. Remember, postmodernism is not new to the scene. We read about postmodernism, frankly, I think the first time in the book of Judges. Every man did that which was right in his own eye. What's right is wrong. What's good is bad. I think we also see it in Isaiah chapter 5. Woe unto those who call evil good and good evil. I think we see it in Romans. I think we see it in Corinth. And we have seen that bent in people. We are going to write our own rules as we see fit. Nothing new. So whether Paul Harvey was seeing where postmodernism was going or not, postmodernism, at least the concepts, have been around a lot longer than simply since the time of, well, let's say Martin Heidegger or the French philosophers, the Derridas and the Foucaults in the, let's call it the mid-20th century. Paul Harvey saw where it was going. So too, apparently, does Jason Bradley, who wrote Four Things I'd Do If I Were the Devil. Number four, confuse true worship with nationalism. You heard Paul Harvey say, I'd persuade people, our Father who is in Washington. Have you noticed? A lot of evangelicals sort of been praying like that. Okay, they haven't exactly been praying, but they've been acting like that. Where does our hope come from? It comes from Washington? No. Christians, writes Mr. Bradley, Christians are supposed to identify themselves with the kingdom of heaven and cast a wry eye at the way the enemy manipulates empires. So if I were Satan, I'd try and convince them that their country was unique. It's a Christian version of an empire. Once they saw their country as the lone Christian nation, they'd excuse inexcusable behavior. Sound like a moral majority to you? Sound like culture warriors to you? Fighting the wrong battle? Our battle is not this kingdom. It's really quite interesting to me when you consider the kingdoms that we so strive to gain control of, thinking that's going to fix the problem. Now, maybe that's not you, but that's many evangelicals. We all recognize that. And so they think if we just get the right, if we just get more votes, if we just get the right Supreme Court. Now, look, all of those things can be nice, good things. Not saying that, but when we put our hope in them, we're putting our hope in something that's just not something that Jesus is putting his hope in. If Jesus wanted to control the Senate and have 9 conservative Supreme Court justices, he would. If Jesus did or didn't want Donald Trump in office, he'd be sitting in the Oval Office. It's nothing to him, but that is not what he is after. He does not desire to reign in earthly kingdoms. That's kind of a no-brainer, frankly. He wants to reign in hearts. That is a much bigger achievement. Was thinking about what's the hymn, the song that all the earth, holy, 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 all the earth shall praise thy name in earth and sky and sea, except human beings. Everything right now is praising God and being obedient to God as it should, except humans. Conquering the human heart is no small thing, and that is what God desires to do, to reign inside of an individual, not in some global capital someplace. We need to remember what this battle is all about. It is not a battle for real estate. It is a battle for souls. The devil would like to confuse us about that.
And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames.
man. Want to call Paul Harvey, Jeremiah, or Isaiah? Simply nailing it. The devil seems to be pretty successful these days.
If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door.
Now, see, he biffed on that one. You do have the schools trying to control emotions with mindfulness.
Yeah,
oh, wait.
But you still got the, you know.
Not much better, really, is it?
Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the
devil, oh, he seems to be doing just fine. Thank you very much. In case you're not breathing along with me, you might want to think about doing that because more kidney punches are coming your way next. And they're brutal on Wretched Radio. If you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsène, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandma used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
On behalf of everyone here at Wretched, let me thank you. Thank you for your ongoing, generous support of Wretched. While the love of money most certainly is the root of all kinds of evil, it is nevertheless needed to pay the bills. And we are grateful that you've allowed Wretched to pay our bills for over a decade now. We don't take your support for granted. We're reaching more people than ever, and without being greedy, we want to reach even more. If you've never supported Wretched and you have the means, we would be grateful if you would prayerfully consider joining our gospel partners with your monthly tax-deductible support. Wretched.org/donate has all the details. Together, we can reach more and more people who are in desperate need of hearing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The more you give, the more we're able to give away. Visit Wretched.org/donate today. Wretched.org/donate.
Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
A young woman come in, 18, with a boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took her back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts there. It's twins. The father looks at that, this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst Preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting Preborn at preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
The Mission Ball is genius in its simplicity. It is a soccer ball covered with a thorough law and gospel presentation. Great way to draw a crowd, make a connection with people, and ultimately create opportunities to proclaim Christ. And the Mission Ball is now available in 38 different languages. Over 100,000 have been used in 91 countries so far. If you're able to help spread the word with the Mission Ball, go to themissionball.org. Themissionball.org.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is mercy. Those who possess this gift are able to show compassion and comfort the afflicted, people who are sick, dying, or bereaved. God cares about the things that afflict us and has provided comfort in troubled times. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey. Good day.
1965. This is Wretched Radio. Being rather prophetic, but not a prophet. The schemes of the devil. He does scheme, you know. He's not taking a nap. He's prawling around. This is my understanding. I'm not going to write some sort of satanic novel. We've got enough of those, how the devil operates and how the planet is working. There's just not enough detail to tell us that. But I think the devil kind of comes up with the big ideas. And then he has others implement them. And so he continues to concoct scheme after scheme after scheme, all in a desire to keep people from getting saved, because he knows that was the very thing that the seed was promised to do, and that he did, and that he is going to keep on doing, saving souls. And so the devil would like to thwart that. Jason Bradley, writing a rather contemporary Four Things I'd Do If I Were the Devil. He came up with four of these. One was confusing true worship with nationalism. You know, starting Sunday school with the Pledge of Allegiance. Encouraging the wrong power model, that if we just band together, special interest group it, we could spread the principles of Christ's kingdom with a top-down power over model. Why take up the cross when the scepter would be so much more effective? Doesn't that sound like a very, very sizable segment of evangelicals who are trying to fix the country using the wrong power model? My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight. But it's not. It's a spiritual kingdom that he is building. But the first two in this list of Four Things I'd Do If I Were the Devil by Jason Bradley. Wowza, focusing on the church. And this is punchy stuff. Number one, diminish the Spirit's influence. Don't panic, my conservative friend. It is okay that we talk about the Holy Spirit. I know that it's scary for us to do that because of the abuses. Nevertheless, he writes, maybe I'd make ministry a game for professionals.
Oh.
If I could encourage ministry to be done vocationally by highly educated experts, they'd probably forget pretty quickly that the church was birthed by a largely uneducated group of spirit-empowered ne'er-do-wells. Everyone else would be content to show up at church once a week as spectators. Check, check, and check. Now, let me, if you don't mind, put a sharper pencil on this whole educated business. Were the disciples uneducated? And the answer is no and yes. Yes and no. They weren't like book-learned scholars that were sitting around the Areopagus. I know they'd have to move, but they weren't just sitting at the city gate pontificating. They weren't the wise guys. They were hard-working fellas. There ain't nothing wrong with that. Need more of those these days. But To say that they were entirely uneducated, I think has caused too many people to say, I don't need any sort of degree. I don't need any sort of theological training. I just need the Holy Spirit. Away I go. Hold on. The disciples, while not going off to university, they did indeed have formal theological training with the greatest rabbi of all time, Jesus Christ. So let us not think that we don't have to be theologically trained. They were. Pastors should be too. Consider the training that Paul received for 3 years from Jesus. Everybody who is going to seek that office should be trained. Timothy was trained by Paul. Now, granted, it wasn't at a seminary. And if you can figure out a way to get your theological training, a good, sound theological training, not just I listen to a bunch of sermons and read books, but a really stringent theological training, you don't have to go to seminary. I don't think that it should be a law. I'm not sure you'll do better than going to, I don't know, say the master's seminary at tms.edu. But you need to have some sort of an education. It's biblical. Now, having said all of that, then you wonder, well, then what was his point? Why take a snipe at educated professional pastors? His point wasn't that they're educated. His point was that education was the zenith. It's the pinnacle. It's learning for learning's sake, so that I can be a doctor, so that I can be a pontificator who is not affected, who is not changed, who doesn't grow in sanctification and holiness because it doesn't get from head to heart. That's what he's after. Number two, if I were the devil, I'd turn the church against the culture. It probably would be as simple as ramping up their moral outrage at the depravity around them. This would help them forget that their battle isn't against people, but against spiritual forces. I'd encourage them to reduce people to stereotypes and generalities. Once they reduce people to abstractions, they'd quickly forget that it's these people that Jesus passionately loves. Done and done. Everybody needs to figure these things out, how involved they get in trying to help people in the culture. But if we're mere culture warriors, I would suggest to you, almost as a rule, we're missing the mark. Almost as a rule. Engage, discuss, talk about, learn about, fine. But if we're trying to change the culture, that's it. It's not Christian. It's a good thing to do. But that's not the Christian activities that we are supposed to be about. Soul winning is what we are about. That is what we are to be doing. What does it profit anyone if a man is sober his whole life and dies and goes to hell? What does it profit a woman if she does not act on her lesbian tendencies but dies and goes to hell? I were the devil, was reading a grace gem. If you don't get grace gems, you really should. They're free. So if nothing else, you're getting a good deal, and that's about as Christian as it possibly gets. And it happened to be a grace gem from A.W. Pink. A.W. Pink, early 1900s, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had some issues of his own that he needed to work through, like going to church regularly. But that aside, he, even then, railed against the church that had lost its focus. That had become a center of entertainment to keep people kind of busy and amused and entertained. Now, A.W. Pink, I think he died, if I'm not mistaken, in the 1920s, give or take, something like that. Is that about right, A.W. Pink? Here's what he wrote. The vast majority of churches are in a sorry state. Those that are 1950, that's what I said, Joey. 1952. Please don't try to correct me. I said 1952. I'm a talk show host. The vast majority of the churches are in a sorry state. Those that are out and out worldly are at their wits' end to invent new devices for drawing a crowd. Others, which will still preserve an outward form of godliness, often provide nothing substantial for the soul. There is little ministering to Christ to the heart and little preaching of sound doctrine, which souls cannot be built up and established in the faith thereby. The great majority of the pastors summon to their aid some professional speaker, some glory glitter, some smoke, some mirrors, some skinny pants, some whatever novelty, who puts on a high-pressure campaign and secures sufficient new quotation marks converts to take place of those who have lapsed since he was last with them. What a farce it all is. If I were the devil, I'd be infiltrating the churches to tell them, water down your theology. Don't even get involved in anything that is controversial. And put on a show so that people will like you. The devil is a very busy devil. For some, he is distracting them by having them involved in politics too much when they should be involved in proclaiming the gospel. Others, he waters down through amusements, never has any sharp edges that might cut so that God can actually heal them. So what do we do with what the devil is up to? It feels like, wow, there ain't nothing we can do. Yes, there is. Sir, madam, love your spouse. Teach your children about Jesus. Get involved in your church. Faithfully attend, faithfully serve, faithfully encourage and pray for your pastor. You say, but we'll never see a national change on that level. You're right. You're not called to do that. You're just called to be faithful on your level. This is Wretched Radio.
Does your church have a passion to see souls saved, but you don't know where to start? HeartsForTheLost.com. Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They will fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar, and then they will go out into the streets with you to put what you've learned into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or schedule your conference, go to HeartsForTheLost.com.
Know your reformers. Ulrich Zwingli was a Swiss reformer who pioneered expository preaching, introduced the regulative principle, and brought a republican government to Switzerland. He fought against the Roman Catholic Church for theological and political independence and died in battle. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Idea at wretched.org. If you want to send us anything, this is Wretched Radio. You see a story that's wretched, send it to idea at wretchedradio.com. A sermon, good, bad, otherwise, send it. If and you have a question, comment, conundrum, or snark, send it. Not easy being a BG, I'll tell you that much right now. Send it to idea at wretched.org. Okay, so I'm flipping through the channels. And it's stuck in my head, and I'm now going to curse you with the earworm. Want to know what song is stuck in my head? Because since yesterday, actually there have been several, but I'll focus on one as best I can. Don't throw it all away on love, our love. Don't throw it all away on love. Andy Gibb. I'm flipping through. I hit it, and it's like, and in it goes. I'll tell you what other song is stuck in my head. There's a couple of them. What is the Backstreet Boy? No, NSYNC. Joey, what's your favorite NSYNC song? I keep forgetting because I know you're a big fan.
None of them. Are you thinking of Bye Bye Bye?
I don't know that one. I don't know what it was, but somebody sent to me an idea at wretchedradio.com, a link to a Facebook page. It was a church that was doing a love song medley poorly. And they, you know, hey, look at the theme is love, so we're doing all these love songs. So they're singing Bee Gees and Backstreet Boys or whatever. And I noticed, you know, they're getting very close to becoming Grandma's Church, and they were so dated. I mean, so old. What are they going to do when the kids come along and go, we want the songs from the 90s. No, that was grunge. We don't want this to be, I guess we do want it to be our grandma's church. You know, when you're sniffing the trends, when you're chasing after the latest fad, you are going to be constantly changing. And eventually you will get annoyed because you're not going to like the latest trend of the kids these days. What is that at a church service? Singing a medley of love songs? So this was a new one. And what struck me about it was not how flat it was, but that it was the same arrangement. Gentlemen, I don't know if you remember this, but a number of years ago we saw it. We played this a number of years ago. A love song medley from church where they do, you know, short little versions of, you know, just the hook of a song.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that how a medley works?
That's how a medley works. And so they took the charts from churches that have already been doing this for years. They're not even inventive, let alone current. idea@wretched.org. If you just want to sing along, don't throw it all away on love. Alrighty then. Thanks. idea@wretched.org. Oh, look at this, would you? These are two attaboy emails right here. I'm going to keep the name out of both of these, but attaboys. At our church, I've been asked to gather information for a meeting with our youth pastor and youth workers to discuss Hillsong. We plan to answer the question, should we allow our church or youth group to perform their music? That is a great question. That is a why? Why? Because so much, there is decent stuff. It's thin, but there is decent stuff in Hillsong music. You're not going to find rank heresy. And it's, I guess, catchy. The kids seem to like it these days. What's the problem? Well, it's the meat. The hook is Brian Houston. And the New Apostolic Reformation movement. And bad teaching. And ecumenism. And joining together with Rome to be just one big happy apostate family. That's the problem with Hillsong. It's not necessarily what they're singing, but it's who is singing it and what it gets the kids into. You're singing the Hillsong music, and then you see Brian Houston on TV. You go, that's no problem. I can watch that guy because we sing their songs in church. And so this fellow, who is also a pastor at his church, said, I personally feel that we will be compromising if we allow this in our church. At a boy. Another one. Thanks, guys, for helping us be informed. It has enabled me to start the debate in my church about the credibility of Bill Johnson. He's another leader of the New Apostolic Reformation movement. You can see all about it on Drunk in the Spirit. You got to watch it to get it. You have to watch it, not read about it. You got to see it to believe it. Drunk in the Spirit at wretchedradio.com. I have begun to question the credibility of Bill Johnson and other similar ilk teachings. Ilk is never positive. He writes, it ain't pretty when you tell elders they are being deceived. No, it ain't pretty. But it's necessary. We can rebuke elders. Now, it should be lovingly. It should be respectfully. It should be thoughtfully. If you have a church and you're starting to feel the whiffs of the NAR wafting into your building, this is my suggestion. Rather than confronting them and going, okay, sit down because you guys have been biffing it. You've been letting bad music and bad teaching into our church. Here's their roots. This is the apostasy. Stop it. Okay, that's one way. You could give them a copy of Drunk in the Spirit and say, would you watch this and tell me your thoughts about it? Because in it, we do indeed mention, I think we mention Hillsong, Jesus culture. It is the meat that lures and draws. And once the kids get in, the hook is the New Apostolic Reformation movement, which leads me to an email that I received from Laura. Think of Laura. Laugh. Don't cry. I know she'd want it that way. Okay, I can't believe that I know that song. That is just absolutely,
I can't believe anybody knows that magic song.
I have a brother who came out of the drug rehab directly into the NAR movement. That's interesting. Ooh. One addiction for the other. Here's what I'm wondering. If you have heard that the emotional high from a manipulative worship or prayer experience mimics a drug hit, have you seen this? I have not heard it phrased like that, Laura, because the phrasing, though, that I have heard is more like, oh, I just felt the presence, and oh, it was just so, oh, just the joy of the Lord, and I feel so warm and high. So I have heard that type of language, but not compared to a drug hit. Here are two examples. A study that examined the brains of nuns, not N-O-N-E-S's, but Roman Catholic N-U-N-S's, who engaged in centering prayer, another bad form of prayer, which is meant to create a feeling of oneness with God. The nuns' brain scans showed similarities to people who use drugs, like mushrooms. Huh. Another, people who have had a religious experience often report feelings of joy, peace, and warmth. And new research has found that during these experiences, certain reward centers in the brain are activated. Huh. The study found that among devoutly religious people, spiritual feelings activate the same areas of the brain as other rewarding and pleasurable experiences like love, sex, and drugs. Huh. Quote from Laura's email, contemplative spirituality is a mind-altering practice that is as spiritually dangerous as a drug. And much like a drug user, the contemplative spirituality user has to keep coming back to the contemplative practice for more hits, ever seeking the elusive spiritual highs once attained from the practice, but which can no longer be found. You think I'm exaggerating? Don't take my word for it. Thomas Merton, a mystic, once compared contemplative spirituality mysticism, CSM, to the same powerful experience generated by mind-altering drugs. That from Sola Sisters. They were in the New Age movement. Fascinating. Is it possible? Laura, I think you might be onto something. There's our brains, we don't have a clue, really, what's going on up there. We know that they are phenomenally complex. We know that they are just so intricate, so amazing. How a brain surgeon can be an atheist, I don't understand. How an eye doctor cannot believe in God just is a complete mystery to me. But we do know this. We're seeing, is it not true with pornography? That it's affecting centers of the different areas of the brain in men? Do we not see this with technology? And these, what are they calling it, digital heroin? That the kids are getting addicted to the shiny object in front of them? Well, just gotta have it, because it gives them a little, it gives a shot of endorphins or something, and it makes them happy. Is it possible that that is a part of the appeal of the New Apostolic Reformation movement? It gives you a spiritual buzz? And I think the answer is, yeah, I do think that's a possibility. So that raises the question, how do you help somebody kick the habit? It's not easy. Let me just tell you that. It's not easy. But I will say this, whatever tactic you take with them to try to rescue them from the NAR, you better be loving, because if you're judgmental and critical, you are only supporting the stereotypes that they have spoken about you. They love to love bomb people into their movement. We got to love bomb them right back, genuinely, but love bomb them nonetheless. Drunk in the Spirit at wretched.org. This is Wretched Radio. Couldn't say it any better than Michael Woolworth from Bible League International.
The world will drill wells and provide food and shelter. Those are very important causes.
Yes.
We smile favorably upon those. But getting God's word to believers half a world away, people you won't meet this side of eternity, that's on us as God's people.
Ain't nothing wrong with digging a well, but it is only the Christian church that can provide living water. Bible League International for decades, delivering Bibles to believers who have made a profession of faith, believers who have studied the basics of the Christian faith, are then given living water in the Word, a Bible. For just $5 per Bible, you could deliver a Bible to a believer overseas through Bible League International. Might it be possible you could send, say, 6 per month? Please call Bible League at 1-800-YES-WORD.
Thank you for being here today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. And thanks to all of you who have your new copy of our gospel booklet, Are You a Rotten Fish? Jesus was, as they say in the vernacular, relentless about the subject of true and false conversions, parables about wheat and tares, wise and foolish virgins, good fish, and rotten fish. And if you study church backslider rates, it's clear his concerns were warranted. Are you a rotten fish? Perfect for you if you want to know more about, well, true and false conversions, wheat and tares, good fish and rotten fish. Wretched.org/fish to get your copy of Are You a Rotten Fish? A booklet that will help you compare and contrast the true gospel versus false gospels and the correct response to the gospel versus, well, a plethora of incorrect responses. Wretched.org/fish to get your copy of Are You a Rotten Fish? Wretched.org/fish. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
My special guest today is Dr. John MacArthur. Sir, what is the issue with the Master's Academy International?
The issue with TMAI is very simple. Biblical training. Training men to be the kinds of pastors that are defined and described in the New Testament.
Fascinating, sir, but there are so many ministries who encourage us to do acts of charity internationally.
I mean, it's fine to support philanthropy or some feeding of poor people or caring for children that have needs. But at the end of the day, the impact on a nation has to come from the pastors and leaders. So investing in that is making the maximum investment for the maximum impact.
Thank you, Dr. MacArthur. We're all out of time, or I'd love to ask you more questions. If you would like to support the mission of the Master's Academy International, training indigenous pastors to be biblical expositors, changing nations, you can do that at wretched.org/pastor.
Important dates in Christian history. 1456. Johann Gutenberg produces the first printed Bible, and his press becomes a means for dissemination of new ideas and catalyzing changes in politics and theology. Without the printing press, the Reformation may have looked very different. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
1-877-282-BEEP. This is Wretched Radio. Still got it. Wow, I just That's love me. Having a set of pipes like that. The elasticity still there, my pseudo falsetto. This is Wretched Radio, 1-877-282-BEEP. If you want to leave a message with a question, comment, conundrum, or theological dilemma.
Todd, hell. Is that a secondary issue now or what?
Hell?
I'm confused. Is it hell or is it separation? Is it annihilationism or is it a long period of time in a real place? Too many people changing their minds. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, there's a little of that going on. There is a bit of a movement on annihilationism, which they're now rebranding conditionalism, I think because of the negative connotations that annihilation rightly has. They knew that they better change the name to conditionalism. And so that is a little bit of a growing movement. I don't think it's gaining a ton of traction, but it is attractive. And there's a reason for it. It's because we're not God. We think lower than God does. We do not even begin to grasp how high and holy he is. But he knows, he's aware of it. And that is why sin is so profoundly offensive to him. A single lie is damnable for eternity. You say, that seems extreme. A single lie? Yep, because that puts you in rebellion against God. You are a rebel, and God is angry about it. And his righteous, loving response is to execute justice with the correct sentence. And because the crime, while maybe looking like a little boo-boo to you and me, is committed against an eternal God. Therefore, the punishment is worthy of eternal damnation, and it is eternal conscious torment. If you want to say that Jesus was just being poetic, and when he was talking about weeping and gnashing of teeth, I didn't mean that literally. Please remember that poetry is never as strong, powerful, as whatever it is that you're trying to describe with your poetry, it's never as much as the actual. It's a groping effort to try to reveal this is what it really is. But only the reality can demonstrate how horrific hell is. So it's eternal conscious torment, and it's eternal because our sins are committed against God. But there is something appealing about the idea of, well, at some point they get snuffed out. And here's why I think we have a slightly better sense of compassion than we do of justice, or a wronger understanding of compassion than we do of justice. Either one of those might suit. In other words, we just, because we're compassionate, I don't want anybody languishing forever and ever and ever and ever. In fact, hold on, let me see if I can find this thing with the deal. There was somebody it was the article that I received. It was a grace gem, and the guy was talking about hell and how horrible it is and how awful it is, and it went on and on and on. And we can be inclined, because we either are too compassionate, or we've got a wrong understanding of compassion because we don't understand justice and righteousness correctly, we could be inclined to go, give them a break at some point. It's so hopeless. There's such utter despair. There's no relief. It's got to end. That's wrong. Because God has a correct understanding of compassion. That's why he sent his son. But he also has an understanding of sin that is far better than ours is. And he has a far better understanding of the correct punishment, because he gets justice better than we do. So, sir, I understand why some people are inclined to like the idea of annihilationism, but we must reject it. You raised the question initially, is this an essential issue? And the answer is, it could be. It isn't historically. If you said that hell automatically, anybody who believes that there is a time limit on it is a heretic, I don't think we can do that. I think you might be able to do that, but you'd have to explore with the individual what's leading them to think that way, and then dive into their understanding of the character and the nature of God. And I would dive into how they go about the business of interpreting the Bible, because in Matthew 25, I see a perfect parallel. Those go off to everlasting life. Do we think that's annihilation after we're in heaven for 7 million years? Boop, we're gone. No, forever and ever. And then the parallel is those go off to everlasting destruction. It's a perfect parallel in the Greek, which indicates they are the same. They are eternally great and eternally horrible. And so I would want to ask, how are they interpreting the Bible, which might reveal something more profound? But we can't say in and of itself our understanding of hell is an essential, but it could be, which means you'd have to talk to the annihilationist his or herself.
If one of these open-air preachers gets arrested and they have the right to be there, what happens to them? Do they actually get charged? Do they get out for free? Do they have a fine to pay? If it's not illegal, how can they charge them or arrest them? And if you are out there and you do get arrested like that, I understand that you should obey them and you should do what they say at the time. But how do you fight this if you have no money?
Well, you call up the Alliance Defending Freedom, folks. That's what you do. They'll provide an attorney for you, and you can always ask for a different one. If you are not satisfied with the representation you have received, they'll ask you that in court. But you can call Alliance Defending Freedom, and they will help you out. They are great folks. They have lawyers all over the country who do scads of pro bono work. They also do it for free, so you can tap into that. What happens to those people who go to jail? It depends. It just depends on the court system. It depends on the country. Great Britain is a little further down the road than we are. But almost, I'm not aware of anybody who has had to stay in jail for a long period of time. Yes, they have been arrested. Yes, they have been put in handcuffs and they have been carted off to the pokey. But I don't think anybody's had to stay. And I think any of those sentences so far have all been overturned. I suspect that could change sometime soon.
My father-in-law is attending a church where a pastor is doing a sermon series, or has done a sermon series on the Shaft. And I wanted to know if he should leave this type of church if a pastor is that theologically ignorant about the heresy in the Shaft. Should he leave that church?
I think this is right up there with the hell doctrine. First of all, if he's preaching a sermon series against it, way to go, pastor! I suspect that's not what's happening. He's probably trying to show compassion and help people with their struggles, with their heartaches. And so he's latched onto the shack. You'd have to talk to the pastor first. It is a very bad sign. It is so obvious. The book and the movie are riddled with theological heresies. Does he adhere to them? You'd have to talk to that pastor. So I would approach the pastor lovingly and ask, where do you stand on universalism, as William P. Young is for it? Where do you stand on Jesus being a boy, the Father being a girl, and the Holy... What's the Holy Spirit? Oh, I know, it's an Asian woman. The God the Father is the African-American woman. The Holy Spirit is the Asian woman. And Jesus looks, well, pretty much like everybody's portrayal of Jesus. Are you okay with that? And there's a scad of other problems with it, but I'd want to sit down and ask him. And if you discover from this that there are heretical things going on, or he adheres to those things, well, then, yeah, you should leave the church. But before leaving a church because of a sermon series on the shack, I just want to check it out first.
My husband and I have been studying the book of Ephesians, and we came across Ephesians 5:4, where Paul is talking about refraining from coarse jesting. And so when it comes to so-called Christian comedians like Tim Hawkins, is that biblical? And where do we draw the line when the gospel becomes just a joke? And is that okay to have Christian comedians, or is that something that we should refrain from?
It's a great question, I'm glad that you... I love that. We're reading this in the Bible. Wait a second, we see this. Now, how do we put the two together? That's the Christian walk. Good on you for that. There is a place for comedy. There is a place for satire. There is a place for sarcasm. We just got to watch where that line is. And I think in Ephesians 5:4, bawdy, coarse jesting, no place in Christian comedy. But you raised a slightly more challenging theology. I think that's pretty obvious. Potty words, the rah, rah, rah kind of humor, anything that's inappropriate for an audience of all ages is something that we should avoid. However, what you brought up, though, was making jokes about Christianity. Can you do that? Very, very carefully. But you have to watch out for being blasphemous, which is different than Ephesians 5:4. We don't want to be making light or bringing God down in any way, shape, or form for the sake of a punchline. And it's easy to do that, and this is a subjective issue. There can be differences of opinion, but whether you're Babylon Bee, whether you're Tim Hawkins, whoever you are, and you're trying to do humor, a pastor in the pulpit, be very mindful and receive counsel from others to ask, is that getting a little too cheeky with God's character and nature? Because if it is, a punchline, a laugh, certainly is not worth it. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.